tail, and he removed it only for the more emphatic modes of speech. He assumed a broad black ribbon for his glasses and wore them more and more askew as time went on. His hair seemed to stiffen with success, but towards the climax it thinned greatly over the crown, and he brushed it hard back over his ears where, however, it stuck out fiercely. It always stuck out fiercely over his forehead, up and forward. He adopted an urban style of dressing with the onset of Tono Bungay and rarely abandoned it. He preferred silk hats with ample rich brims, often a trifle large for him by modern ideas, and he wore them at various angles to his axis. His taste in trouserings was towards fairly emphatic stripes, and his trouser cut was neat. He liked his frock coat long and full, although that seemed to shorten him. He displayed a number of valuable rings, and I remember one upon his left little finger with a large red stone bearing Gnostic symbols. "Clever chaps, those Gnostics, George," he told me. "Means a lot. Lucky." He never had anybody black mohair watch chair. In the country he affected grey and a large grey cloth top hat, except when motoring. Then he would have a brown deerstalker cap and a fur suit of Eskimo cut with a sort of boot end to the trousers. Of an evening he would wear white waistcoats and plain gold studs.